BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, I'm Lauren Laverne, and this is the Desert Island Discs podcast. Every week, I ask my guests to choose the 8 tracks, book, and luxury they'd want to take with them if they were cast away to a desert island. For rights reasons, the music is shorter than the original broadcast. I hope you enjoy listening. My castaway this week is the cellist Yo-Yo Ma. He is America's favourite classical musician. Born in Paris to Chinese parents, he arrived in New York as a child prodigy and has represented the USA on the world stage ever since. When moments of collective significance arise, he is entrusted to articulate them. He's performed for 8 presidents and was the first musician to play on the World Trade Center site 1 year after the 2001 attacks. His recordings of Bach, Beethoven and Brahms have won numerous Grammy Awards, and he believes that music can precipitate change and forge new connections. His many globe-trotting collaborations have taken in soundtracks with Ang Lee and Ennio Morricone, along with adventures in television with the Sesame Street cast and The Simpsons. On his last tour, he played for Italian health workers at the US-Mexican border and in a Beirut techno club. Recently, he's been asking a new question. What can music do for people in a pandemic? His online concert series, Songs of Comfort, clocked up over 17 million views. Perhaps unsurprisingly, when he was called up to receive his vaccination, he took his cello along too, treating everyone waiting in line to an impromptu performance. He says, it's hard to define music because it's ephemeral, but its effect is always about something bigger than yourself. Yo-Yo Ma, welcome to Desert Island Discs.
Thank you so much, Laura. It's such a pleasure to be with you.
Listeners can actually check out your performance at the local vaccine centre online. It was filmed while you were there. I mean, there you were with your cello. Obviously, you were wearing your face mask too. So I wonder how quickly people realised it was you.
Some people did and some people didn't. Someone asked me on my way out, do you play with an orchestra? I said, like the Boston Symphony. I said, yes, sometimes I do. And maybe the best visual that I had was that there was an older gentleman who actually started hearing music, and then he pulled up a chair as close as, you know, he could within the social distancing and just sat there and listened the whole time as if this was something he really needed. Yeah. And for me, that's the essence of doing music at all, is that you just go where the need is. It's a form of fuel, of food, maybe not in the material, physical sense, but certainly in the ephemeral and spiritual sense.
Absolutely. It's such a wonderful and a slightly incongruous moment in that local hall with such beautiful music. And we must get on to your first piece now to take with you to the desert island. What is it and why have you chosen it today?
Our dearly departed Leonard Cohen, there's something extraordinary about his voice. He sounds like the monk that he kind of wanted to be, but in musical form as a performer. And in some ways, he's a reluctant performer, did not take easily to the stage. And yet what he sang about was the troubles and the sticky wickets that all of us go through in life. And the fact that he's able to put them out on the table and still sing the song, Alleluia, is something that I think we all can relate to and feel that, yeah, he's one of us. We get it. He gets it. He gets us.
The Baffled King composing Hallelujah. 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 Hallelujah.
Leonard Cohen and Hallelujah. You've performed that track, Yo-Yo Ma, on the subway in Montreal, I believe.
I did, and it was so much fun.
So you are, of course, known for taking your music all around the world to some really incredible locations. And you're actually in the middle of a global tour performing Bach's cello suites when the pandemic happened. And I know that you've been playing that collection of music throughout your life. Does 65-year-old Yo-Yo approach them differently from 25-year-old Yo-Yo?
Let's put it this way. I'm still trying to get it right. It depends what you think right is, mm-hmm. right? So in a humorous way, I'm saying that. But in a deeper sense, with every stage in life, there are certain truths that we encounter. And with each time I've explored it, it's been through a different lens. The present lens is about actually saying simply, this is what I do. This is very meaningful to me. And if I'm a visitor to your community, that's what I can offer. Let's talk. I think in Bach's music, and especially for me in the cello suites, but in general, I think there's a balance between absolute compassion for what humans feel, what you feel, he understands. That balanced with the fact that he is also objective. And in listening to his music, one feels that balance. One feels that you're both understood, but that also you're part of something bigger that can look at what you are with a certain kind of perspective and clarity. That approach is very healing. We need both. And to have that in one person in musical form is kind of a special treat.
It's time for your second disc, Yo-Yo. What have you chosen?
It's called Erbarme Dich. The first time I heard it, I just wept. Do you ever experience it? You know, you see something that's so beautiful, so glorious, and it's not because of sadness or tragedy, but something that is just so extraordinary, you're brought to tears. Could be a landscape, it could be something, and that's what it did to me. And I think everything I said about sort of Bach understanding how you feel, for me, this is like the moment where you hear this music and it's like, here he is completely enveloping and receptive and cuddling and cradling all of the human condition, all of who we are. And it's just devastating. I'm brought to tears every time I hear it.
Erbarme Dich from Bach's St. Matthew Passion, performed by Kai Wessel with the Amsterdam Baroque Orchestra, conducted by Tone Copeman. So, Yo-Yo Ma, your parents were both musicians. Born in China, they set up home in France before eventually settling in the States. How did they come to leave China?
My father, who was born in 1911, was 25 when he left China. He had graduated from university. He had had teachers who had studied in France in art and in music, and contrary to what his parents wanted him to do. And I think the compromise that they made was that if he went, he had to go get a further degree. So he ended up getting a PhD in musicology at the Sorbonne and ended up staying in France for 27 years. So this is 1936. And so think about this. My father, therefore, was in China during the Japanese invasion of China. So, you know, the beginnings of World War II. And then he was in Paris during the Nazi invasion of Paris. So he actually, you know, experienced World War II from two different parts of the world. My mother, who was 12 years younger. She had a beautiful voice. She was talented, musically talented. And she went in 1949. There was the Japanese invasion. Then there was the Civil War. Mm-hmm. And so she experienced that. And at the last moment in 49, she left to go to Paris to pursue her vocal studies. And of course, they got married. My sister came along and I came along. The reason we moved to the States, you know, it's a funny immigrant story because my parents, who had no money at all, managed to scrounge up the funds. We did a across the country train trip and visited relatives in different places. My sister was a very talented violinist, played with the Denver Symphony Orchestra. Mm. And the two of us gave one little concert in New York just before we left. And a lady who had founded a school was looking for a music teacher, had heard about this Dr. Ma, who was a good pedagogue, and came to the concert, invited him to come teach at this school. And had that meeting not happened, I would have grown up in Paris.
Your father, you described him as a born pedagogue, I think, a born teacher. And of course, He was your first music teacher too. What was his teaching style?
He was not the cuddly type. He's very analytical. He had really great methodology. So the way that he taught me allowed me to become extremely efficient in practicing. You know, he was very severe. I had two tiger parents, immigrant energy. You know, it's like, you got to succeed. You got to do it. You got to do it. I always thought the room where I went to practice and do calligraphy and learn French and do ear training, that room was so full of work. You know, I didn't attribute this to my father, but it was the place, you know, it was the place of work. But we were homeschooled until I came to the States in second grade.
As you mentioned, Yo-Yo, your older sister is also very musical. She plays the piano and violin, and there's a gorgeous video clip of you both performing for President Kennedy. You were just 7 years old at the time and had recently moved from Paris to the States. What do you remember about that performance?
I knew that we were doing something kind of big and there were important people there. But what you don't see in the clip, but I have a photo of, was that there was an MC that evening, and he was Leonard Bernstein, who was lovely. He didn't conduct, but there was a conductor, and the conductor was Danny Kaye. And Danny Kaye, the actor, comedian, the enormously talented person, conducted and did such funny things with the orchestra, made them sit down, made them sing, made the audience sing, made all these things that I was mesmerized by him. I didn't leave the event saying, I want to be president. I left the evening thinking, I want to be Danny Kaye.
Would you tell us about your next disc?
I was introduced to the Brahms First Concerto with Leon Fleischer and the Cleveland Orchestra and George Zell conducting. For me, the music of Brahms implies a humanistic struggle. It's the second theme that just caught me, because pianist has two hands and the different voices. And to hear how with his two hands, he's able to actually create a struggle, a rhythmic struggle, tugging against, you know, in rock music or in getting the groove, which side of the groove are you on, you know? And this is sort of like a larger version of groove, but it's like the swaying of a boat but that you're being tugged on either end by currents, and you're still trying to go forward. It's amazing.
part of the first movement of Brahms' Piano Concerto No. 1 in D minor, performed by Leon Fleischer and the Cleveland Orchestra, conducted by George Sell. Yo-Yo Ma, you met and performed for the famed cellist Pablo Casals as a young boy. What kind of impression did he make on you?
By that time, he was in his 80s. I played for him. I asked him to sign my autograph book, and he wrote something nice on it. And he said to my parents, "Don't forget to go and play baseball," which is really a beautiful thing to say. And I think what he meant by that is make sure you don't spend all your time doing music. And soon after that, I read someplace, and I heard him say it too, that he thought of himself as a human being first, as a musician second, and as a cellist third. And coming from Tiger parents, that was literally music to my ears, because it says, aha, you see, it's not all about cello playing. And what I admired about him was that he actually lived his values.
And what does living your values mean to you?
When you have giants like that, or there's so many giants, what can I do to help? What are we going through now? What are the fractures in the world? And most of us, myself included, we feel like, well, it's just me. I can't do anything. But actually, I think just starting with the first steps, getting into action to say, hey, I'm going to just put on videos. I'm going to zoom into hospital rooms and play for patients where you can't, humans, visitors, family can't visit. They'll have some music. That's energy. Or you join things, you help out, you look for where the need is.
Yo-Yo, it's time for your fourth disc today.
One cannot be a cellist and not know, appreciate, and love Jackie's contribution to the cello world.
That's Jacqueline Dupre.
I first heard her Elgar that she recorded when she was 19 years old with Sir John Barbaroli. And she was like a massive shooting star that just entered into our planet, space, because it was an explosive talent. The energy that you could hear from the first movement of the Elgar, Jackie just elevated it and shot it into the consciousness of a much larger general public.
Part of the first movement of Elgar's Cello Concerto, performed by Jacqueline Dupre with the London Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Sir John Barbaroli. You went to New York's Juilliard Music School before going on to study at Harvard, Yo-Yo Ma. What kind of college student were you, I wonder?
The idea of dorm life, living with, you know, fellow students and was just so appealing. That was my escape from home. I thought, I got to do this. I really got to do this. Was I a good student? Not particularly. What I loved was the chance to explore anything that was in any way interested in.
When you were 25, Yo-Yo, you had to have surgery for scoliosis, and that put you in a cast for 6 months, which must have been such a scary time. How worried were you about how it was all going to work out?
You think that you're immortal at a certain time in your life. And I knew this was a major operation. And I was kind of at peace with whatever was going to happen because I was with my wife. She was obviously worried, but that wasn't going to affect her relationship with me, regardless of how the operation turned out. And I thought that I had experienced a lot in music by that time. And so if I never played again, that's okay. And that's where I really value being able to have an education, not because I went to an elitist institution or because I was hanging with muckety-muck people, whatever. The thing that was interesting is like it actually gave me, maybe totally unfounded, a certain kind of confidence to say, look, you know, yeah, I spent these number of years doing this, and if I never did it again, I'll live with it. I'll find something else to do. But it was a very meaningful moment because then the extra years that came from being able to play, that was a gift.
It's time for your fifth disc, Yo-Yo Ma. Why have you chosen this? Why are you taking it to the island with you?
I'm a great fan of Oscar Peterson, and I actually only heard him once live, and it was an extraordinary experience. It was at an Edinburgh festival, and I was playing in the little hall, and he was performing at Usher Hall that evening, which was the big hall. And I got a ticket. I sat out, you know, up in the balcony. And for like 2.5 hours, I was treated to the most magnificent performance. I think that was a performance where he just became bigger and bigger. I thought at 1 hour and 45 minutes, I thought he's getting to the end. No, and then he came back and more. 2 hours in, says, okay, that's that. Yeah, no, this is the end. This is great. This is fabulous. And no, he came back with more. It was so totally amazing.
The Oscar Peterson Trio playing Tintin Dale. Yo-Yo Ma, your interest in musical connections inspired you to set up the Silk Road Ensemble. That was back in 1998. It's a collaboration with musicians from North America, Asia and Europe. And I believe it began with a question, which was, what happens when strangers meet? What were you hoping for?
Hopefully not disaster. This is an interesting question because I think even during the Roman period, the Romans knew that there was something far out there, as in another culture, and they knew of each other's existence. There weren't the border patrols that said, okay, this is where it stops. It's your scale is here, my scale is here. Don't you cross that
line.
Forget
everything that you've just heard in that country when you come into this one.
Exactly. And today we have a choice. We can examine things. And I think I chose to exercise that ability to be able to go to the new countries that came after the dissolution of the Soviet Union. And music actually is a good that travels lightly. If we think that culture's unique ability to turn the other into us is true, then music actually possesses that ability. Because if you like a tune, it's yours. You like that secret chord? It's yours. Just suddenly a huge world opened up that allowed us to actually show the world on one stage when the Silk Road performed.
It's time for your sixth disc, Yo-Yo. What have you chosen?
Dame Janet Baker has one of the most wonderful, glorious voices. And the song Morgan is about, I'll read you a little bit of the poem. It's so beautiful. It says, tomorrow again will shine the sun, and on my sunlit path of earth, unite us again as it has done, and give our bliss another birth. The spacious beach under wave blue skies will reach by descending soft and slow, and mutely gaze in each other's eyes as over us rapture's great hush will flow. And you hear this music, and with those words, it's a moment. Boy, has she been a great citizen. She's a real hero.
Morgan by Richard Strauss, performed by Dame Janet Baker with Gerald Moore at the piano. You've been married to your wife Jill for 42 years, Yo-Yo Ma, and you have two children together. Your own parents were extremely involved in your musical development. How important was it to you that your children had music lessons and music in their lives?
Well, it was important to my wife because, so I said, you know, we don't need to give them music lessons. Says, no, you got it. This is the family business. They have to, you know, learn some instrument. They should know what. And thank goodness she did that. So they took piano lessons. My son loves to sing. My daughter played the violin. And they both grew up with so many, you know, musicals and stuff. And they know all the words. And they, when they get together, they're singing away. And what I think is music is part of human literacy. It's one more way to access our inner lives and our external lives.
Yo-Yo Ma, we've got to make some room to hear your next disc. It's your seventh.
Track seven is Moscow Nights. For me, it's the voice of Dmitri Horodovsky. This man died way too young. For those of you that are hearing this, look up the performance on YouTube, for example, because they're singing in an open square. Maybe it's Red Square. And you see the audience. And for me, this is the ultimate example of a communal experience. You see the audience just swooning and appreciating every single phrase. And it made me actually love the piece. And on a desert island, I just want to remember that as an example of what humanity is when we are actually having that communal, transcendent experience.
Не слышны в саду даже шорохи, все здесь замерло до утра. Если б знали дороги подмосковные вечера, если б знали вы, как мне дороги подмосковные вечера.
Moscow Nights by Vasily Solovyovsadoy, performed by Dmitri Kovorostovsky with the Moscow Chamber Orchestra, conducted by Konstantin Orbelyan. Yo-Yo Ma, I'm about to cast you away to the desert island with your discs, of course. You'll have your discs to keep you company. You've described music's power to change the atmosphere of a place. It's invisible, but nonetheless it is present in a space and almost has a physical effect on the place where we are. What do you think your discs will do for the island?
The environment is going to change me. And if I'm there for a month, a year, forever, that will again make me reassess, who am I? What is my purpose? What is the island? Do I listen to the music in my head? Do I create new music, the sounds of nature. Maybe they're bird songs. Maybe there are new sounds that when you strike a rock, there's something that I've never heard before, that maybe there's something that inspires me when I look at the tides. And ultimately, there's going to be a blend, as has always happened in how music has been formed in the past and will be in the future. And what are the things that I will want to try to replicate from home? The music certainly is part of it. Oh, I remember Leonard Cohen, Strauss, Moscow Nights. Or maybe there will be a new music that comes from the crackling fire and the birds and animals and insects. That's what we are when we are living, is that we're constantly taking in new information, stimulated, and trying to blend it into our existence so that it's meaningful.
One more disc then, before you go. What's it going to be?
This disc, I wore out the LP. I listened to it when I was 12 years old for a whole year. I know every note of that recording because it meant the world to me. It represented everything that music could be, and Schubert especially. So in the joyous moments, there's the slight wistfulness. Within the dark cloud, there's a little ray of sunshine. And it's like, it's always mixed. So the patina of Schubert is always very evocative. In many ways, he was a modest person, but he was able to describe, like Bach, both the most profound human emotion with the most glorious description of transcendence. Every time I hear it or play it, I get the goosebumps. And it's a physical reaction to a transcendent emotion.
Movement from Schubert's Trio No. 2 in E-flat major, played by Alexander Schneider, Pablo Casals and Mieczys Waroszewski. So Yo-Yo Ma, the time has come. I'm going to cast you away.
The time has come.
The time has come. It is time to go. I'm going to give you the books to take with you. You can have the Bible and the complete works of Shakespeare. You can also have another book of your choice. What would you like?
I don't want to be greedy, but I would love the Encyclopedia Britannica. Is that possible?
Yes, it is possible.
I'm the type of nerd that would have relished opening any one of the 24 volumes and just reading an article says, wow, who knew? That's really fascinating. And if I'm going to be on a desert island and I want to have all of whatever that I've left behind, I would want that. One of the greatest things we could have educationally or as humans is access. That would be the closest thing to access of everything that I would have left behind.
Well, we can definitely do that for you. We can also, perhaps a more frivolous note, offer you a luxury item to make your time on the island more enjoyable. What will you choose?
I would choose a tool.
Now, you can't have anything practical. Your luxury item has to be for sensory stimulation or relaxation only.
I would love not a tool as a survival thing, but a tool as something that I love deeply, which is my penknife, because specifically a Swiss Army knife, because I always, in the days of when we could carry it on board. I always travel with it because it's the most wonderful thing to have. It's the best companion to have under the greatest variety of circumstances I can find myself in.
Because you love it, and because the Swiss Army knife is undeniably one of the most pleasing items in history, we can absolutely give that to you. I mean, I just wouldn't be that cruel, as if I wouldn't allow that. Oh. It's yours.
Oh, thank you.
Finally, perhaps this is the most difficult question for you. If you had to save just one of the discs that you've shared with us today, which would it be?
I would say I'd take the Schubert.
Yo-Yo Ma, thank you very much for letting us hear your Desert Island discs.
Lauren, thank you. It was a joy speaking with you. It's great.
Hello. I really hope you enjoyed that interview with the cellist Yo-Yo Ma. His performances have been chosen by so many castaways over the years that it's especially great to finally have him on the island in person. We've cast many other classical musicians away, and you can download their programmes from BBC Sounds or our programme archive. If you enjoyed Yo-Yo's music choices, you might want to find Dame Janet Baker's Desert Island Discs and also Jacqueline Dupré's Favourite Eight. Well worth a listen. You can hear their programmes if you search through BBC Sounds or the Desert Island Discs website. Join me next time when my guest will be the actor and director, Richard Wilson.
Welcome to Descendants, the series which looks into our lives and our past and asks something pretty simple. How close are each of our lives to the legacy of Britain's role in slavery? And who does that mean our lives are linked to? Narrated by me, Yersa Daly Ward, we hear from those who have found themselves connected to each other through this history. Whoever you are, wherever you are, in Britain, the chances are this touches your life somewhere, somehow.
Descendants from BBC Radio 4. Listen now on BBC Sounds.